Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Se van acercando las vacaciones y si tienes un bebé en casa, seguro que te preocupa cómo organizar sus comidas durante los viajes, los días de playa o las salidas a la montaña. Una opción cómoda y muy socorrida son los potitos de Nutriben, porque saben cuánto te preocupa dar a tu bebé tarritos nutritivos y con todas las garantías. Los potitos se preparan aquí en España, con los mejores ingredientes, como frutas, verduras, carnes o pescados, y solo emplean aceite de oliva virgen extra. Esos ingredientes tal cual se trituran, cocinan y se envasan al vacío para su correcta conservación. Y ya sabes que igual de importantes son los ingredientes que lleva un alimento como los que no lleva. Los potitos de Nutriben son tarritos que no contienen sal, azúcares añadidos, almidón, colorantes, conservantes, gluten o aceite de palma. Recuerda que los únicos potitos son de Nutriben. Gracias a Nutriben y a su marca Potitos por apoyar los buenos contenidos en este podcast.
Hello, I'm Cristina Mitre, journalist and author of the Beauty Mail blog. Welcome to my podcast, where every week I will chat with top experts in health and wellness so we can learn together how to thrive and enjoy a better life. Jesse Inchuspe, best known as Glucose Goddess, has written the book everyone is talking about, Glucose Revolution. It all started as a self-experimentation. After graduating in mathematics from the King's College London and a master's degree in biochemistry from the University of Georgetown, she worked in genetic analysis at a Silicon Valley startup. This made her aware of how powerful food habits can be, and especially what role glucose plays. So for 2 years, Jesse wore a continuous glucose monitor on her left arm, just like people with diabetes do, to record the glucose levels and more accurately dose their medication. My lab was my kitchen, my test subject was myself, and my hypothesis was that food and movement influence glucose through a set of rules that we could define, she says on her book. Today, we talk with her about everything she discovered about the fascinating wall of glucose. Side note to listeners, if you have a metabolic disorder or any other conditions, please remember to always check with your doctor. This podcast does not substitute medical advice. Jesse Inchuspe, welcome to my podcast.
Hello, Christina. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Let's talk about glucose. On your book, you point out that regardless of our diet, we should think about our glucose levels. So let's start with the basic, like the very, very basics. What's glucose and what is so important to think about it, even if we don't have, for example, diabetes?
Very good question. So glucose is your body's preferred energy source. So every single cell in your body uses glucose to perform its function. So for example, your eye cells use glucose to see, your brain cells to think, your feet cells to dance, your heart cells to pump the blood. Every single cell in your body needs glucose. And the easiest way that we as humans get glucose into our body is by eating it. So anytime we eat something starchy, like bread, pasta, potatoes, or something sweet, like fruit, dessert, chocolate cake, my favorite, that's how you get glucose into your body, starchy or sweet foods. And so you might think, Christina, oh, well, if glucose is energy, I just need to eat a lot of starchy and sweet foods and I'll have a lot of energy. And that's actually not the case, because if you give too much glucose to your body, bad things start to happen. It's the same thing as if you give too much water to a plant and it drowns. Well, too much glucose in our body starts causing issues. And so for me, I actually discovered through my journey that too much glucose was causing me mental health disturbances, acne, weight gain, problems with my period. And so I went on this big journey to try to figure out how I could avoid having too much glucose in my body without not eating the foods I love anymore. And throughout my research, I discovered that 90% of the population, so 90% of people who are not diabetic, have too much glucose in their system and they don't know it. But you know the consequences, like being tired, having cravings for sweet foods, being hungry all the time. And so now I share this latest science that helps people feel better without doing a diet or anything complicated.
Okay, let's dive into it. Why our glucose levels might be dysregulated, even if we have like a healthy diet?
Well, because actually, you know, over the past century, we've been eating way more starchy and sweet foods. So our brains, when we eat something sweet, our brain gives us pleasure. And this is the problem, because as a species, we love eating sweet and starchy foods because they give us pleasure. And so a huge, huge industry has been created around foods that give us pleasure. But unfortunately, they're not good for our glucose levels.
Mm. I know that you prefer to use the term sustainable lifestyles rather than diet. But as you say in your book, the diets that work are the ones that flatten our glucose, fructose, and insulin curve. So let's go deep into each of those terms so that we understand it before we go.
Sounds good. So there's a term I would like to mention, which is a glucose spike. So a glucose spike is what happens if after a meal, you give too much glucose too quickly to your body. And so if you're wearing a glucose monitor, which is what I was wearing when I discovered all this, you see a spike in your blood sugar levels. You see a spike in your glucose levels. And these spikes are the ones that actually cause a lot of damage inside and give us all these consequences that we're so familiar with. So when a diet or, you know, a new lifestyle helps you feel better, it's actually flattening those glucose spikes, regardless of the way you do it. And when you flatten your glucose spikes, so many things fall into place. You know, inflammation goes down, aging goes away, you lose weight, you feel better, you have more energy. And so across the board, we know that the quote unquote diets that help people are the ones that avoid these glucose spikes. And then for insulin and fructose. So those are two important terms. You don't really have to remember them, but what you need to know is when you reduce glucose spikes, you also reduce your insulin and your fructose spikes, because insulin is released by your body in response to glucose spikes. But too much insulin also causes issues, notably the development of type 2 diabetes. And then finally, fructose is a molecule that exists in foods that taste sweet, and it exists hand in hand with glucose. And fructose also causes a lot of issues, for example, fatty liver disease, and it's a big driver of obesity. So anyway, that's complicated science, but all you have to remember is that if you flatten your glucose curves, those two other molecules will also see their curves flatten, and you'll get a lot of health benefits.
So we've talked about glucose spikes, insulin spikes, and fructose spikes. Which one is the worst?
That is a good question. I would have to say, I think we would say probably insulin spikes, because too much insulin is a very, very, very big driver of chronic illnesses. And unfortunately, right now, we cannot measure insulin on a monitor. We can only measure glucose. And so ideally, in the future, we'll have an insulin monitor, because it's even more precise in telling you what's happening inside of your body. But right now, what we do know is that when we avoid glucose spikes, the insulin and the fructose spikes also go away. And that's one of the reasons that you get a lot of health benefits.
Okay, let's talk about the rest of the carbs family. the starch, yeah. the fiber, the sucrose. What role do they play?
So it's important to remember that the way that glucose arrived on the planet is thanks to plants. So plants invented this amazing process called photosynthesis. And photosynthesis creates glucose out of the carbon in the air. So when you look around, if you're at the park or in a forest, and you see all these plants, that's all glucose around you. Every single plant is made of glucose, which is so cool. And so plants can use glucose for energy, or they can transform glucose into other things to use in their function. So another thing they can make from glucose is fiber. And fiber is very important. It's the reason that plants stay upright and don't fall over. It's like the grout between the bricks in a house. And so for us, fiber is very, very beneficial because it helps us have a good digestion and it helps your body not absorb too much glucose that's coming down during a meal. And we'll talk about it in a bit when we talk about the hacks because it's very, very important, very cool molecule. So that's one of the things that plants can make from glucose. The other thing that plants can make from glucose is starch. So starch is very simple. Starch is just lots of molecules of glucose put hand in hand and stored away, usually in the roots of a plant. And when we eat something starchy, so let's say we eat a potato, we're actually eating these molecules of glucose attached hand in hand in the form of starch. And then we break it down into our body and it creates glucose in our bloodstream. Then fructose. So as I mentioned, one of the good things about flattening your glucose curves is that you also flatten your fructose curves at the same time. And so fructose is made by plants to make their fruit taste really, really, really sweet. And the reason that plants want their fruit to taste really, really sweet is because plants really want animals to eat their fruit. Because if you eat the fruit, then you're also eating the seeds. And, you know, in a wild context, then when you go to the bathroom, when an animal goes to the bathroom outside, then they poop out the seeds and then the plant gets its seeds spread far and wide. So it's a very clever mechanism. But for us, fructose just makes these fruit taste really sweet and gives us pleasure. And then final word that you asked about is sucrose. And I'm sorry, we're talking about so many very complicated concepts.
No, but it's very important to have the basics before we dip into the hack, the tricks.
Perfect. Perfect. So sucrose is a very simple storage solution. So in fruit, plants, sometimes they attach a molecule of glucose with a molecule of fructose, just so they can compress the storage of the molecules. And that joint molecule, half fructose, half glucose, is called sucrose. Now, sucrose is very important because we know it under another name and we use it almost every day. Sucrose is table sugar. It's the white stuff you put in your coffee or you use when you bake a cake. And we eat way more of this molecule than we used to before, which is one of the reasons that we have way more glucose spikes now than before.
Mm. Perfect. Perfect explanation. But you are with me that there are some foods that will keep our glucose level completely steady, not spikes, but they are not very healthy. So which other things do we have to have in mind?
That's a very good point. So we have to keep in mind that foods that are very high in fat, especially like processed foods, unhealthy fats like fried foods, those will keep your glucose levels steady because the only thing that creates glucose spikes are starchy and sweet foods. And so if you eat, for example, 5 kilos of butter, your glucose levels are not going to move. And if you're wearing a glucose monitor like I was wearing, you might think, oh, this is really healthy. Actually, no, because too much fat is not good for the body. But that's something we cannot detect on a glucose monitor. And then second thing that was very surprising to me when I discovered this is that alcohol keeps our glucose levels very steady. And in fact, if you add alcohol to a meal, it will reduce the glucose spike of the meal. But that is not a reason to drink alcohol at every meal. It actually, it does this thing because alcohol goes to your liver and it kind of overwhelms the liver and it makes your liver shut down a little bit because your liver has to deal with the alcohol, which is a poison. So it's not great. But as a result, when your liver is busy with alcohol, it can no longer release glucose into the bloodstream, which is one of its jobs. So you will see a flat glucose curve, but it's not actually a healthy flat glucose curve.
It's
so those are the
fake.
Two warnings. Exactly, exactly.
So having all of this in mind, what is so important to flatten that glucose curve, that keep avoiding those spikes, even if we are as fit as a fiddle?
Yeah, because so recent science that I discovered shows us that 90% of people who don't have diabetes actually have these glucose spikes every single day without knowing it. And these glucose spikes, even if, you know, you look fit from the outside, they can cause a lot of consequences. So I'm going to go through these consequences. And if you relate to any of these symptoms, if you're like, oh, that's me, then you're probably having glucose spikes like 90% of the population. So the most common symptoms are being hungry every 90 minutes or every 2 hours. So you just had a meal and then you're hungry again. Your stomach hurts. You're like, ooh, I really need to eat all of a sudden. That's a very clear sign that you had a glucose spike and then a glucose crash. Second, cravings. If you're somebody who maybe during the day, at some point you're like, I really want to eat something sweet. I really want to eat like a cookie or dessert or something. That's often a consequence of a glucose spike, because every time our glucose levels drop after a spike, the craving center in our brain activates and tells you, Christina, you have to eat something sweet right now. That's actually your glucose levels being on a roller coaster that activate the craving center. And when you flatten your glucose curve, when you avoid the spikes, you're not hungry all the time anymore. You don't have cravings anymore. Okay, then being tired. I used to be really tired, you know, mid-morning and mid-afternoon, and I thought it was normal, so I would just drink a bunch of coffee, because everybody tells you it's normal to be tired. It turns out that actually glucose spikes and glucose crashes make us really tired throughout the day, especially after a meal. So if your energy is not steady, if you don't feel like energized throughout the whole day, that could very likely be because of glucose spikes that are happening in your body. Then other things, acne, inflammation on your skin. Maybe you have rosacea, maybe you have psoriasis, any sort of inflammatory-based diseases, because glucose spikes create inflammation in the body. And the easiest way to see them is on your skin. So that's a very common symptom. Then aging. So every time you have a glucose spike, your body slowly ages. And the more glucose spikes you have, the faster you age. So you might see this on your face, for example. You might start developing wrinkles. And then internally, your organs are also slowly aging.
Yeah, let's talk about this concept called glycation. Because
yeah.
I know that some people have heard it even in the podcast, or like beauty brands saying like, oh, use mm-hmm. this product because it avoids glycation. What's glycation? What happens in our body?
So you know when you put a piece of bread in the toaster? And the piece of bread goes from white to brown. That's glycation. Glycation is cooking. And from the moment you're born, Christina, the inside of your body cooks slowly. And then when you're fully cooked, you die. So glycation is cooking. Glycation is aging. And we can't stop this process, but we can slow it down or speed it up. Every glucose spike, especially glucose spikes from sweet foods, because there's fructose there too, speed up the process of glycation. And I can tell you exactly how it works, like, you know, on a biological level. So when there's a lot of glucose in your body, the glucose molecules, they run around like kids on a playground. They go everywhere in every cell and every part of your body. And glucose molecules, they then bump into other molecules. And when a glucose molecule bumps in to another molecule and sort of hits it, it glycates the molecule. And that's the process of glycation in action. So, you know, it's important to remember that, yes, you can use creams and you can use lots of stuff on your face, but actually there's a lot of impact on your aging and how many wrinkles you're going to have on your face, depending on how you eat and how many glucose spikes you're having.
So a cookie tastes delicious, but it can accelerate the aging process in my skin. That's another way to see it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we'll get into it. But then, you know, I discovered ways to eat that cookie with fewer glucose spikes, so with less aging. And that's really the beauty of it all.
Yeah, we will go through it.
Yeah, so that's aging. There's a few more symptoms that I would like to mention. So glucose spikes increase hormonal problems and fertility issues. So if you're somebody who has polycystic ovarian syndrome, if you're somebody who is going through menopause and experiencing a lot of symptoms, we know that reducing glucose spikes can bring a lot of relief. And then finally, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, in fact, you point a research on your book that shows that in postmenopausal women, a diet with fewer glucose spikes is associated with a lower incidence of insomnia. That's important.
Yes, it's very important. It's very, very important. Yes, we don't realize, you know, how much glucose is linked to our female hormones, but it is very closely linked.
Mm. There's also something very fascinating that I found out reading your book, and it's regarding cholesterol. When we talk about heart disease, cholesterol is often the main topic of conversation. But in fact, as you point out, half the people who have a heart attack have normal levels of cholesterol. You say that the key might be in a specific type of cholesterol and is linked to glucose, fructose, and insulin. Could you please give us more details into this?
Absolutely. So we used to think that the best measure to see if you're going to have a heart attack or if you have a heart problem is to measure just your total cholesterol level. And as you mentioned, we then realized, oh, this is weird because half the people, 50% of people who have a heart attack, they have normal cholesterol levels. So that can't be the best marker, right? And then we discovered there's actually different subtypes of cholesterol. So we now know that the one that causes problems is the LDL cholesterol. And then inside of the LDL cholesterol, we discovered LDL type A and LDL type B. And one refers to these small, dense particles, and the other one to these sort of large, harmless particles. And so what we want to avoid is have too many of the small, dense particles, because those are the ones that will lodge underneath your blood vessel wall and create plaque. And we discovered as well that it's actually the biggest driver of these small, dense particles is sugar. It's fructose, because when you eat fructose, your liver turns that fructose into these small, dense cholesterol particles. So that's huge, because we used to think, oh, we need to reduce how much fat we eat. And actually, eating fat creates the large, dense, harmless cholesterol particles. So now we know it has to do with sugar and reducing the fructose spikes. And then second, Christina, so another big driver of heart disease is actually inflammation. So you can have a lot of cholesterol, but if it's not inflamed, if it's not what's called oxidized, it won't cause too many issues. So now we know that actually we need to also look at inflammation levels. And as I mentioned, glucose spikes, they increase inflammation in the body. And so we know it's very important to reduce those glucose spikes so you can reduce inflammation. And so for those listening, we now have two much better markers that you can measure in your blood to see your risk of heart disease. So the first one measures how many small, dense cholesterol particles you have. And in order to measure that, you have to look at the triglyceride to HDL cholesterol ratio. You can ask your doctor about it. And the second marker is called C-reactive protein, and that measures inflammation in the body.
Mm, so that's the way to measure if you, because that was my next question. How do you measure inflammation in your body?
It's a blood test. It's a blood test. You can ask your doctor about it, and it's called C-reactive protein, and it's going to measure inflammation, and it gives you a really good picture of the health of your heart and how much at risk for heart disease you are.
Mm. And regarding the glucose monitors, you said that, you know, to go through all this research, you were one of those yourself. Is this sort of thing that diabetic, that you wear that when you have diabetes, is something that you would recommend to people? Do we really need to wear a glucose monitor?
So, you know, I've done all the research myself. I wore a glucose monitor nonstop for 2 years. I looked at all the science. I tested all of the hacks on myself to illustrate the scientific studies. I've done all the work of wearing it and figuring out, you know, which hacks to apply to avoid the spikes. So no, you don't need to wear one. you can just read the book and you'll see, you'll get all the information that you need to start avoiding the glucose spikes and improving your health. Then, you know, if you have access to one, it's always very interesting to try it out and see. I would just say that right now, Christina, like, they're a medical device. And so for somebody who's trying them just on their own, it can be quite confusing to understand the data. It can be quite stressful because you see these numbers go up and down. And you're like, oh my God, is this normal, not normal? So I think it's still a bit early for everybody to just go and get one. If you have enough context, education, then maybe it's okay. I would say if you read my book and you're like, oh, I really want to try, then you have enough information in the book to guide you. But it's still early. Mm. Yeah.
Maybe in the future we will have a wearable to measure it, or even our insulin spikes and things like that. So
that would be great. That would be my dream.
Who knows? So we've talked about glucose spikes related to skin conditions, menopause, mm-hmm. postmenopause, reproductive health, but we haven't talked about mental health. What's the link between glucose and the mind? What do we know?
Well, we don't know a lot yet, but we know some things. So, you know, your brain has these cells in it called neurons, and neurons are very sensitive to glucose. They also use glucose for energy. And so every time there's a glucose spike that happens in your body, your brain also feels it. And as I explained, you know, glucose spikes, they create inflammation. They stress out the mitochondria in your cells. And so your neurons also get this stress. There are several studies that are showing that the more glucose spikes in your diet, the more you have symptoms of depression, the more you have symptoms of anxiety. For me, Christina, that was really the light bulb moment when I discovered that glucose spikes were one of the triggers for this mental health condition that I had since I was a teenager. And that was really, really wild. So we know it's related. We know the more spikes in your diet, the more you're going to have symptoms of whatever mental health problem you're struggling with. But it's a very young field of study. So we need way more studies. But, you know, when you flatten your glucose curves, you just feel so much better. Happiness increases, energy levels increase. You just, overall, it's a much better situation.
Okay, great. Now we have the whole picture. So let's get practical. Now that we know how important it is to flatten our glucose curves, let's do it. How do we do
it? Let's do it. So what I did is I went to all of the recent science and I summarized the recent science into these 10 principles, these 10 hacks that are easy to apply. And so we can start with maybe my favorite one, which is eating your food in the right order. So this is pretty amazing. It turns out that a meal can have a very different impact on your glucose levels depending on the order in which you eat the food in the meal. This is mind-blowing. So if you eat the constituents of a meal in the right order, you can reduce the glucose spike by 75% and the insulin spike by 40%. Now, this has a huge impact on your health, on how you feel, on your cravings, on your likelihood of weight gain, on your mental health, on your inflammation, on your long-term risk of chronic diseases, and you're not even changing what you're eating. So the right order is vegetables first, proteins and fats second, and starches and sugars last. So let's say we have a meal in front of us, and let's say we have chicken, we have broccoli, we have rice, we have half an avocado, and we have, I don't know, like some chocolate for dessert. So the right order to eat the food in is the broccoli first, then the chicken and the avocado, then the rice, and then the chocolate for dessert. And if you do this, if you always start with your vegetables and you do it in this order and you eat the starches and sugars at the end, you will feel a huge difference. You won't have the glucose spike. You won't have the glucose crash. Your energy will be much steadier and you'll feel better throughout the day. And for me, it was really, really a revelation to do this.
Let's do a short break so you can practice your Spanish.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
¿Sabías que los bebés son capaces de autorregularse y comer lo que necesitan? Hasta el primer año, la leche ha de ser su alimento principal, bien sea lactancia materna o artificial, y poco a poco podrán ir probando diferentes texturas y alimentos. Ahora, con buena temperatura, a todos nos gusta salir más de casa, y en verano pasamos mucho tiempo fuera, en la playa, la montaña o recorriendo el mundo. Si tienes un bebé que ya ha empezado con la alimentación complementaria, para esos momentos puedes contar con los diferentes tarritos que ofrece Potitos. Hay recetas para bebés desde 4 y 6 meses y solo llevan ingredientes como frutas, verduras, carnes o pescados que se trituran y se envasan tal cual. Los Potitos de Nutriben son tarritos seguros, fáciles de conservar y transportar, ya que no necesitan refrigeración, tan solo mantenerse en un lugar fresco. Se calientan en microondas o al baño María, sin conservantes ni azúcares añadidos. Gracias a Nutriben y a su marca Potitos por ser nuestro mecenas del mes.
So, how quickly can I eat the foods, one after the other, or do I have to wait? So I take my veggies first, I wait, and then I take the protein, and then I wait, I take the fat, and then I wait.
You actually don't have to wait at all. You can just eat them right after the other. And the reason this works is because in the vegetables, there's fiber. And as we mentioned at the beginning, fiber is a substance that plants make. And it's very, very helpful and important. And so when you eat your veggies first, the veggies, they land in your stomach and then they go to your intestine. And there in the intestine, they create this mesh on the wall of your intestine, this like protective mesh. And this mesh, then when glucose comes through later in the meal, this mesh prevents your body from absorbing too much of the glucose into your bloodstream. So as a result, you have this protection barrier against the glucose spike.
Mm. So if you already eat like the Oxford plate, it's very easy to follow. But what about if I'm eating like a stew or mm-hmm. I'm eating a sandwich or a plate that all the things are mixed together? How do we do it?
Well, then we go to hack number two. So what we do is we don't touch that meal. We don't touch the dish that is mixed. We're not going to go and decompose our sushi or our paella. Like that's a hassle. What we do is we add in the beginning of our meal a new dish. We add a vegetable-based starter. So we make whatever's your favorite vegetable. Maybe it's a simple green salad. I love cauliflower. Maybe it's like roasted cauliflower. Maybe it's some raw carrots, tomatoes, whatever. You add a dish of vegetables to the beginning of your meal, because like that, you get the fiber benefits. And then the rest of the meal that you're going to eat is going to create a much smaller glucose spike in your body. So less inflammation, less weight gain, less aging, and you'll feel much better.
Okay. You recommend on your book, put clothes on your carbs. What's the meaning of that? Maybe that's the trick number three. I don't know.
Yeah. So sugars and starches are carbs. And when we eat sugars and starches, well, we get a glucose spike. And so the food industry has, for a really long time now, they've isolated sugars and starches. They've turned them into these individual food products that don't have any more fiber in them, don't have any more protein, don't have any fat. It's just carbs that turn to glucose spikes. So what we need to do to avoid the glucose spikes is anytime we eat sugars or starches, we want to add clothing to them. And so clothing is just a word to say fiber, fat, or protein. So let me give you an example. If you're having a piece of bread, for example, that's just starch. It's pure starch. So if you eat it, it's going to make a glucose spike. Now, if you add some clothes to it, maybe you add like a little bit of butter on it, some spinach, maybe a slice of ham, then you're adding this clothing to the starches. So when everything gets to your stomach and gets digested, the glucose molecules, they no longer get to your intestine and get very quickly into your body. They're slowed down and they're protected by the clothing that's on your carbs. So this is really important, especially if like it's the middle of the afternoon and you're at a birthday party and you're going to have a piece of cake. Put some clothing on the cake. Maybe you grab 10 almonds. Maybe you have some Greek yogurt. Maybe you find a carrot in the fridge and you eat it before. So keep this concept in mind. No naked carbs.
Or even when you are cooking, maybe you can have some carrots or celery or whatever with some hummus.
Yes, that's a trick exactly. I use. Yeah, perfect. Perfect. I love it.
Okay. You've got another little trick on your book and it's called Apple. This, I know this is going to be shocking for some people. So bear with me. Apple cider vinegar. You say that it's only recently that scientists have been able to understand the mechanisms behind its health benefits. Tell us about it. What do we know?
Mm-hmm. So apple cider vinegar, well, actually any type of vinegar, is a magical, magical substance. And I was quite surprised when I discovered all the incredible clinical trials, all the amazing scientific studies that showed that vinegar impacts your glucose levels in a very good way. So vinegar contains this molecule called acetic acid. And acetic acid is fantastic. It's a really good molecule. And it does two things. So if you have before a meal, a tablespoon of vinegar in a very tall glass of water, and you drink that before you have your meal, you then will cut the glucose spike of the meal by 30% and the insulin spike as well. You're not changing the meal, you're just adding this vinegar. So how does it work? Well, the acetic acid does two things. Number one, it slows down the breakdown of starches into glucose. So if you're eating that piece of bread, for example, it's going to break down more slowly into individual glucose molecules. So you're going to get a much slower release into the bloodstream, much smaller glucose spike. Second, acetic acid goes to your muscles, Christina, and it says, hello, Christina's muscles. You're now very hungry and you want more glucose than usual. And it tells your muscles to soak up glucose as it arrives into your bloodstream and to store it away for energy. And so with these two superpowers, whatever meal you're going to have afterwards is going to have a much smaller glucose spike. There's also studies looking at just weight loss that showed that just adding this vinegar drink a few times a day then leads to weight loss because it flattens glucose curves. So, I mean, this is one of my favorite hacks because it's so easy and it's so powerful, especially if you're somebody who suffers from cravings or like post-meal sleepiness. This will really help you.
And how long before the meal?
You don't have to wait that long. Ideally, like 10 minutes before the meal. You can even do it 20 minutes before the meal. And if you can just do it once a day, like in the morning, for example, that's also better than not doing it at all.
Okay. And kombucha?
Well, unfortunately, kombucha actually does not contain a lot of acetic acid. It contains like 1% acetic acid, whereas regular vinegar is more like 5% acetic acid. So kombucha is good for your body for other reasons. It's good for your gut because it has all these wonderful probiotics and it's fermented. So it won't really help your glucose spikes, but it's helpful for other reasons.
Okay. You explain in the book that the curve created by your first meal of the day influences how the rest of the day will go. So what's an ideal breakfast for a steady glucose levels? And that's the first question. And the second question is that I want to go through all those Instagram breakfast pictures that we see all the time in our feed. So let's go first with the first question.
Yeah, absolutely. So scientists have discovered that if you take two breakfasts of the same number of calories, okay, if you take one that creates a glucose spike and one does not create a glucose spike, the one that makes the glucose spike will make you hungrier, will make you have more cravings and be more tired for the rest of the day. Okay, so the shape of the glucose spike of your breakfast impacts you for the entire rest of the day. And so the easiest way to have a breakfast that does not create a glucose spike is to have a savory breakfast. So simply put, you don't eat anything sweet for breakfast except whole fruit if you want. And if you do that, your glucose levels will not spike. You won't start the roller coaster. And for a lot of us who are used to eating sweet stuff for breakfast, we've never even had a day without a glucose spike at breakfast. We don't even know how much better we would feel during the day if we didn't have a glucose spike first thing in the morning. So this is very powerful to put in place because you will feel the effects for so long. You'll be able to make better decisions during the rest of the day. Your brain will be sharper. Your body will feel better. You'll be more energized and you'll sleep better. So savory breakfast is the easiest way to go. Essentially, to make a savory breakfast, what you want to do is you want to build it around protein. So any type of protein that you like, it can be eggs, it can be cheese, it can be tofu, it can be meat, it can be protein powder, it can be nuts. And then you add whatever fiber and fat that you want. And then if you want to add starches, that's fine, but just add them for pleasure. So add a slice of toast for pleasure, but don't build your breakfast around toast, you know? And then for sugars, so avoid anything that is sweet, except if you want something sweet, you can have a piece of a whole fruit, for example.
Okay, so that goes against all the rules, like always have breakfast, always have cereal, always have an orange juice.
I know. And we've been told this for a really long time by the food industry because, you know, breakfast foods, they're cheap to make. You make a high margin. They're addictive, so people will keep buying them, and they make you sick. So it's a very big money-making opportunity. But essentially, if you're having breakfast cereal and orange juice for breakfast, you're just having a massive breakfast of sugar. You're getting a super big glucose spike, a super big fructose spike. You're inflaming your body. You're hurting your hormones. You're deregulating your mood and your hunger. You're gaining weight. I mean, it's a whole deal. So really, 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 I recommend people switch to a savory breakfast and you'll feel the difference immediately.
But then we go into Instagram and we see all those super food, super power, super healthy breakfast like acai bowls. Yeah. What do you think when you see those acai bowls?
I think, well, that's a very pretty photo, but actually what's going on inside your body if you eat that is not so pretty. Mm-hmm. So yeah, an acai bowl is essentially so pureed fruit that's turned into this sort of like paste substance. And then you put on top of it, on top of the fruit substance, you put extra fruit and you put honey or maple syrup, you put whatever kind of sugar. So it's just a massive glucose spike waiting to happen. It's not the right thing to have for breakfast if you want to optimize your health. If you're struggling with any of the conditions or the symptoms I mentioned, like this is not going to help you. An acai bowl is dessert. It's just for pleasure. And if we eat an acai bowl, we need to think about, okay, when can I eat this so it doesn't have too many consequences on my body? So maybe you have one for dessert after a meal. Maybe you have it after some apple cider vinegar. Maybe you have it before you go for a walk or you use your muscles in a way. Because those kinds of foods, they're really just so your brain feels good and you get dopamine, but they're really not for our health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what about the smoothies, which are very popular too?
So smoothies, it's a spectrum. So you want to avoid smoothies that are just pure fruit, because as soon as you smoothie your fruit, you're essentially concentrating sugar, you're disintegrating the fiber, so it doesn't have such a protective effect anymore. So if it's a smoothie that is 100% fruit, that's not good for your glucose levels. You can have a smoothie as long as it has protein in it, as long as it has some fat and some fiber, and you're adding fruit, you know, for taste and for pleasure. So for example, my favorite smoothie to have is 2 scoops of protein powder, some almonds, some soaked walnuts, almond butter, berries, like frozen berries that I put in there, a little bit of milk, some hemp seeds, some maybe linseed oil. So I have a few recipes in the book as well. It's really important to make a balanced smoothie so that it keeps your glucose level steady, because all smoothies are not created equal.
Mm. So we have the avocado on toast, another very popular Instagram breakfast. So the idea is to have the avocado and the egg and then the toast.
Exactly. Ideally. That would be the ideal situation. But, you know, for breakfast, I think the food order thing, it can be a little bit complicated, because usually for breakfast, we have this one dish that's all together. But an avocado toast with an egg on it is a perfect, perfect savory breakfast. Maybe some, you know, I would add some sea salt and chili flakes. That's a great savory breakfast. It's one of my favorite ones.
I got a little bit depressed when I read on your book about oats, because I really love porridge. Mm. So we've got bad news for the porridge then.
Well, so oats are starch. It's 100% pure starch. So it's fine to have it in the morning, but you need to have it for taste. You know, you need to add it to something that already has protein and fat and fiber. So you want to avoid, for example, porridge with sugar on it and nothing else, because that's going to just make a big glucose spike and you're not going to feel good and you're going to be hungry very soon afterwards. So if you want to have porridge, for example, you can build one maybe around a bunch of nuts and nut butter. I like an egg in my porridge. You can add in some like frozen cauliflower for some fiber. You can even add in some protein powder. I have some recipes as well. So it's not about, you know, cutting out things from our diet. We don't have to do that. It's about learning how to eat them so that we're not creating these glucose spikes and we're feeling better.
Mm, I understand. Now that we are still on Instagram land, let's talk about the healthy recipes like desserts. Or those recipes, instead of using sugar, they say that they use agave, for example, as a substitute of sugar. What's your advice on that?
So I love this question, because there's a lot of misconceptions around this. So actually, when you look at it from a biological standpoint, all sugars are the same. All sugars are made of glucose and fructose molecules. So if you look at honey, table sugar, coconut sugar, maple syrup, agave, whatever it is, it's all just glucose and fructose molecules. They're just packaged differently, called different names, but they're not better or worse for you, they're all the same. And in fact, this is pretty mind-blowing, but you know, I explained that fructose is worse for us than glucose. In fact, if you look at table sugar, so sucrose, as we mentioned, it's half glucose, half fructose. But if you look at something like honey or agave, it's actually more like 70% fructose, 30% glucose. So actually, from a health perspective, honey and agave are worse for your body than table sugar, because they have more fructose in them than table sugar. I know this is crazy, but it's true. And we really have to stop thinking that agave is this like miracle health food. It really is not. It's better to eat plain old white table sugar than it is to eat agave. Mm. And I want to mention something about honey. So honey is actually, from a glucose standpoint, worse for us than table sugar, again, because it has a high fructose content. And a lot of people will say, yeah, but Jesse, what about the antioxidants in honey? You know, honey is good for you because of the antioxidants. Actually, that's also a myth, because in a tablespoon of honey, there's the same amount of antioxidants as in half a blueberry. Honey is not a good source of antioxidants. Honey is a really good source of a big glucose and fructose spike. But if you want antioxidants, have some berries. There's way more antioxidants in them, and there's no glucose and fructose spike there. So that's a big one to chew on.
Okay, and the last one to chew on. artificial sweeteners, and now we die. Yeah. What happens?
Well, actually, it turns out, so artificial sweeteners, it depends on the one, and we'll get into which ones. But overall, those are better for you than regular table sugar, because they don't create the big glucose and fructose spike in your body. Artificial sweeteners have a really bad reputation. People are like, oh, they're the devil, you know, they're going to make you have cravings and your microbiome and your brain. And I'm like, I mean, Yes, they definitely have side effects, but also regular sugar has way more side effects than those. So we have to think about the context. You know, of course, if you don't eat any artificial sweeteners, I'm not going to say you should add them to your diet. But if you eat a lot of sugar, it's definitely much better to switch to sweeteners than to continue having all this sugar. And in the land of sweeteners, you have some that are better than others. So the best ones that don't cause a glucose fructose spike, that seem to have very little impact on your overall health, very little bad consequences, are stevia. So that's a good one. Erythritol, that's a good one too. Allulose and monk fruit. Those are pretty new, but they really have no impact on most of the health parameters in your body. They still give you the sweet taste, but with very few consequences.
Yeah, but you have to be very careful with the stevia. You have to look for real stevia.
Yes, you do. You do. You have to look for stevia extract. You have to be very, very careful because there's a lot of products out there that are actually cut with other sweeteners and that are not the real stuff. Mm. So yeah, stevia extract. Usually the drops are pretty good. If you find online stevia extract, yeah.
And we have bad news for people that drink soda, even if it's light soda, because I know that the artificial sweeteners that they've got are not the ones that you just mentioned. So
they are not. But then again, Christina, it's better to have diet soda than to have the regular soda. So that's just a fact. Yeah.
Yeah. But better to drink water, don't you think?
Of course. 100%. Always. Yes, yes. Maybe with some vinegar in it.
Is that Concha, my editor, listening to this podcast? She's into diet soda. So she's always trying to find an excuse. So Concha, there's no excuse. Don't drink it.
It's better to drink water. Yeah.
We were talking about cravings and why we were having cravings that's related to the glucose. But what about, I know that I have to change my diet yet, Jesse, but what about if I'm having a craving? What's the best way to go and eat like a biscuit or deal with it?
Okay, so here's the plan. Here's the attack plan. So it's the middle of the day. All of a sudden, you really want to eat. What's your favorite thing to eat, Christina? Your favorite, the thing that you crave the most. Give us an example.
Biscuits.
Okay, biscuits. Mm-hmm. So it's the middle of the day and Christina is just working and going about her day when all of a sudden at 3 p.m. she's like, oh my God, I need to eat biscuits. So Christina, this is what you need to do. So you need to avoid creating a glucose spike from these biscuits because if you have a glucose spike, you're going to start this roller coaster. And then in 2 hours, you're going to want even more biscuits. And then in 4 hours, you're going to want something else. And you're going to be on this track all day. So here's what you need to do to eat the biscuit without creating a glucose spike. So number one, you make yourself a big glass of water with some vinegar in it. Okay, simple. Drink that. Number two, you put some clothing on the carbs. So maybe with your biscuit, maybe easy, you know, it's in your house, grab some almonds, like 10 almonds. That's going to give clothing to the biscuits. So you eat the almonds, then you eat the biscuits, and then you go for a nice walk. Maybe you go outside, maybe you walk around the block because it's sunny. Whatever you do, use your muscles for 10 minutes after eating the biscuits. Because as you do this, your muscles are going to soak up the glucose coming from the biscuits and are going to avoid the glucose spike. So that's the perfect combination. Vinegar drink, clothing on carbs, and then moving after you eat the thing you're craving. That way, you're still getting the pleasure, but you're not starting the cycle because that cycle is very difficult to get off.
Mm. You talk about exercise. Let's dip into this because we've been talking about food and how this helps us to manage that glucose curve and the spikes. And what about exercise? What is it better, aerobic exercise or resistance exercise? Do they help to the glucose curve and how?
Yes. So to be honest, exercise anytime is always going to be helpful for your body. So it's better to do exercise at any point in time than to not do it. Then there's a specific hack that I developed from the scientific studies that's very powerful, which is after your meals, use your muscles for 10 minutes. So after you're done eating, within the hour after your meal, for 10 minutes, get creative and use your muscles in a way. So maybe you put on your two favorite songs and you dance in your living room. Maybe you clean your apartment. Maybe you play with your dog. Maybe you go for a walk. If you want, you can do some really intense weightlifting. I mean, up to you, whatever you want to do. And just by adding this little exercise snack after your meals, you're going to flatten the glucose curve. And this is very powerful, especially for people who have the food coma, you know, after a meal when they get really, really tired. If you add this little 10 minutes of using your muscles, then that tiredness tends to go away. And also you're helping your body not have these spikes. So overall, your mental and physical health will improve. And I also want to mention, Christina, like all the hacks that I mentioned, these are all tools in your toolbox. It's about like using them when it's easy, when it makes sense, when you want to, depending on your level of commitment or what you're trying to heal in your physical and mental health. They're like tools in your toolbox.
Oh, that's great. I don't know if I'm missing any of the tricks. I don't know if we covered the 10 tricks.
Yeah, you are.
Which one I'm missing?
Okay, so we're missing having dessert instead of a sweet snack.
Oh yeah, that was very interesting, yeah.
Yeah. So we don't have to cut out eating sugar. We just have to learn when to eat it. So the worst time to eat something sweet is on an empty stomach. So first thing in the morning for breakfast, for example, or between meals, because then you're going to create a big glucose and insulin spike because your stomach is empty. So the sugar and the glucose will make it very quickly to the bloodstream. So if you want to eat something sweet, for example, you know, I often will walk by a bakery in the morning and see a really good looking chocolate cake or something. And before I would just eat it then, but I didn't know it was creating this big glucose spike. And then I was tired and I had more cravings and it didn't feel good. Now what I do is I buy the chocolate cake and I have it for dessert at the end of my next meal. And if you do this, you're still getting the pleasure, but you're not getting these downstream consequences that most of us suffer from. So that's another hack. Have dessert instead of a sweet snack.
Another question. What if we do intermittent fasting or fasting? How, having all of this in mind, which is the best way to break it? Because there might be a way, because otherwise you might get a spike of glucose.
Exactly. Yeah. So the worst way would be by eating something very high in sugar. The best way would be to start with vegetables, because that way the fiber in the vegetables creates this protection for whatever you're going to eat afterwards. So it really doesn't matter if you do intermittent fasting, if you do not do it, for how long. That's really up to you and your body and how you feel. What's very important is that the first meal that you have is savory and has fiber in it. So regardless of what time of the day it is, you still have to apply the same concept of having, you know, a savory breakfast, a savory break fast.
On my notes, I wrote down something that is in your book. It says, in good health, food habits, be genetics, any last tip to close this interview, Jesse?
Well, I want people to remember actually that whatever they're suffering from, you know, physical or mental, there's a way to put these things into remission. You actually have a lot of power, and 90% of us suffer from these glucose spikes, and they create all these symptoms that we're all so familiar with, and we think we have to live with them, but we actually do not. If you use these tips, if you flatten your glucose curves, you will see that a lot of the things that you're suffering from will slowly go away and you'll feel much better. You'll be happier. And so I'm just really happy and thankful for the opportunity, Christina, to share this science, because I really think everybody needs to know this. It's really very, very important. And I hope that one day everybody knows it and I don't have any work anymore. And it's just common knowledge.
It's just easy. It's not that complicated to put clothes on your carbs and write the food in the right order. And it does have an impact and a consequence on the way you feel. So it gives you that energy that sometimes we are missing. So thank you very much for sharing all those tips with us. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. So good luck. Probably we will see you soon, maybe in Dubai.
I would love to come see you in Dubai. Thank you so much, Christina, for having me.
Thank you, Jesse. Take care. Don't forget that all the notes for this chapter are in my blog, thebeautymail.es. Also, if you don't want to miss an interview, subscribe to the Cristina Mitre podcast on your regular podcast player. And one last favor. if you listen to me on Apple Podcasts. Give me a few stars and leave a review. That way, you will help this podcast to continue growing. Thank you very much. You will be hearing from me again next Sunday.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.